Hashem. Okay, let's begin.
Good morning.
Good morning. A new Chumash. Chumash Shemos. It's a new time in the world.
Chumash
Agalut. Yeah. But it's all a Gula, exactly. It's also a Gula. Zelu Mazeh Bore Elohim. Zelu Mazeh.
Yeah. Magavis.
Okay, let's continue what we learned. We are up to. We're up to Pasuk Ches. All we did was the Mitzudas. So I don't think we did the Rashi. So let me just read the Pesukim again very quickly. It's in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Ches. Vayihi Divar Hashem El Zechar Yilema, Koyama Hashem Tzvok Eslema, Mishpat Emes Shifaitu. It is my command that you shall execute judgment of truth. A Mishpat Emes Shifaitu, the judgment shall be a judgment of emes. The chesed v'rachamim asu, kindness, mercy, asu ish elochiv, one man to his fellow man. Pasik yud, v'almona, a widow, almona, v'almona, v'yosav, v'ger, v'yani, al ta'ash shoyku, do not extort, do not commit extortion to a widow, an orphan, a ger, I'm assuming here means a ger tzedek, all of these people have no one defending them. There is no one. They don't have powerful relatives. Alman does not have a husband. Yosem has no father. Agar has no family. And Ani has no money. Money itself is the ultimate defense. A person has a lot of money. That money, just the fact, oh, he's a gvir, oh. The money itself speaks for you. Alta ashoiku, do not commit extortion. Steal. Basically, the word Hashayku, as far as we're concerned for the moment, means do not steal from them. V'ra'as ish ochiv al tachshu bilvavchem, and this is very unique. We touched upon this last week. Here, Zechar, Hashem is telling Zechar, your thoughts. Your thoughts count. Excepting very, very rare that there should be a nazhara. Do not have evil thoughts. Do not harbor evil thoughts upon your fellow man. That's a very unique type of commandment, because the thoughts of a person are very hard to control, and the Torah does not generally direct commandments to a person's machshava. That's not an accurate statement, because we know that we have the last of the Aser Sadibur says is lesachmoid, kavet. What is lesachmoid? So of course I know that the bottom line is you have to do a maisa. In order to be in violation of lesachmoid, it has to result in an action. But the simple translation of lesachmoid is addressing the person's heart, a person's mind. Simcha v'hayisa ach sameach, joy. How can you command a person to have joy? Joy is something which. It's not always under your control. It's not always, at least that's the way we look at it today. Today's society, it's not something which you can turn on and turn off. It's a switch. It's a light switch. You're happy, you're not happy. There are many, many things that are not in our control if we can experience joy. There are many things not in our control if we can experience jealousy. Yet, we have exceptions where the Torah doesn't indeed tell us, direct us, and instruct us to control our thoughts. Okay, and I want our thoughts and our emotions. Let's put that aside for now. Next, Pasuk Yud Aleph. And now he's coming to give us his little busa shmuz and telling us that in the past history you have refused to listen. Vayimuanu lehakshiv. In the past you have refused to listen, to hearken. Vayitnu chasef soy rores. We learned this last week. You have turned your shoulder backwards. You have run away. You have disobeyed. V'yoznehem hichbidu mishmaya. You have deliberately made your ears heavy, preventing them from listening. Pasuk Yud-Beis, v'libam samu shamir. You've made your heart like a stone, like the tip of the shamir worm, which is rock hard. It's even harder than rock. Mishmoya, from not listening, es hatayra, v'es hadavarim asher shalach Hashem tzavakas beruchoy, in his spirit. What does that mean exactly? Not so clear. Ruach HaKodesh, his malach, his angel, we learned, b'yad hanavim v'harishonim v'yiketzev gadol, and because of your ancestors have refused to do all of the things mentioned above, there was great anger, me'es Hashem tzavakas, v'yihi kasher korav lo shomeyu, And just like now we have the ultimate punishment, midah keneged midah, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu has called out to you and you did not listen, so too, midah keneged midah, you will attempt to call out to Hashem and the time of your difficulty, and Hashem also will not listen to you. V'ayeh, it will be just like, Hashem called to you through his prophets and you did not listen. Cain, likewise, yikru, you will call out, v'loy eshma, and Hashem will not listen. Omar Hashem Tzivokos. Next, the Esau Areim. Hashem then says, and what did I do to your ancestors? I scattered them. I scattered them in a violent way, like a storm. Al kol hagoyim asher lo yidu'um, upon all of the nations which you have no familiarity with. The haaretz, and the earth, no shama achareihem, and the land has become desolate, achareihem, after in their wake, when the Jewish people have left the land, been exiled, the land has become desolate. May oiver umishav, and then there appears to be some repetition, some verbosity, and the grammar is also a bit difficult. Vayosimu eretz chemdo lishama. Again, these words, if they would not appear, we would be very satisfied, because the pasuk already told us, this pasuk, we just read those words. It says that the earth is noshama, v'haaretz noshama acharehem. So what's the repetition? Vayosimu, they have set eretz chemda, the desirable land, l'shama. Who did it? Did we do it or did they do it? It seems both. We learned this last week in the Mitzudah. It's a little bit vague, but it seems, if you take the pasuk after everything we've learned last week, it seems to say is there's a double desolation. There is a desolation in the fact that we have been exiled, but then there is an additional layer of desolation which we have actively brought upon it by deliberately choosing not to return, by deciding when we had an opportunity to return to the land and making a conscious decision that we do not want to return. That added a new level, a new layer of desolation that did not have to be, but we sin by choosing that it should occur. And last week we did the Mitzudos. Now let's learn the Rashi. Rashi, let's start again with Pasuk Yud Beis. Okay, Pasuk Yud Beis. The Pasuk begins, Pasuk Yud Beis. Samu Shamir, that these people have made their hearts into a Shamir. What is a shamir? So Rashi says, Toilas Chazot Mitzur, the shamir worm, which is stronger than rock. Marino, so we just started, I think we decided, so we'll review for you. We did this Rashi, but let's review it anyway. Marin Oisoy Al Hoeben Vihi Mis Baka'as, you guide the shamir worm on stone by drawing a guide, and the shamir does its magic and it causes the stone to crack. Next, Vahi Kasher Koro V'loy Shomeyu, just like Hashem called to you and you did not listen, Om Hashem Tzvokes, Alehen Bo'etz Mayomim, during those days, in the past, Kein Yikru'u V'loy Eshma, in the future, when you will call out, I will not listen, Mida, Keneged Mida. Pasuk Yudalid, Ve'eis So'areim, I will scatter you in a violent way, as if there is a whirlwind, Big Bagolus, in the exile, V'cheino Sisi. That's what I said I would do, and so I have done. And you, Vayosimu, they means your ancestors have caused in their sins the desirable land to be desolate. That is the cause of the Tzim HaMispeit. Aval Ato, Kinesi Litzion Bishvil Tzion HaKaneis HaGoyim, as we learned last week, is that now this is going to lead into the next series of Psukim, and we discussed the break, the Perek break. Really, there's no need over here for the Perek to stop here. Really, this continues into the next Perek. It's, as we mentioned last week, is that the Christians, when they see that it says, Vayosimu Eretz Chemdo L'Shama, this is a gold mine for them, as if to say, oh, you see that the Jews have come to an end. They have caused their land to be desolate, and they're finished, they're done, and there's nothing more for them. Hashem is now going to replace them with a new nation, with the Christians. And that's exactly why they put this chapter break, Perek Ches, here. And Rashi makes it very clear that's wrong. That's not correct. It's not over for us. It's just the beginning. Sheva yipol tzaddik v'kam. A tzaddik falls down seven times but rises up. And this just a wind-up, a hakdama to the redemption, to the geula, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to avenge our enemies and restore us to our land. And don't put a chapter break in between the end of this pasuk and the next pasuk. This is just only coming to build up to what's coming next. Let's now learn the Radak. We'll go back to Radak. Radak is going to begin a pasuk dalet. Pasuk ches. Pasuk ches, back on page 775. The Radak says, Vayehi dvar Hashem. Hashem is returning to his previous discussion. Hashem is now elaborating. The Radak, if you take note, is learning like the Mitsudois David. The Radak is telling us that this section, Pasuk Ches, to the end of the Perek, is an elaboration of what it says, of what exactly I said to the Nevi'im HaRishonim. In Pasuk Zayin, it says, Haloi, es hadavarim asher kara Hashem biyad ha-Nevi'im HaRishonim, b'hiyois Yerushalayim yeshavis ush leiva. So there we learn about Hashem is giving Musar, that is giving Musar to the people who are asking the question, should we fast on Tisha B'Av? Hashem says, this is not the question. This is a ridiculous question. You have, according to the Mitzudas David, he learned the entire topic of discussion that you have the wrong perspective. You're asking the wrong question. Your perspective is off center. Instead of focusing on fasting, you should be focusing on the words of Musar that were delivered through the Nevi'im HaRishonim. And if you don't remember what the Nevi'im HaRishonim said, let me remind you. And that is exactly what we're doing here from Pasuk Ches to the end of the Perek. We are reminding the Jewish people exactly, we're giving you a summary, a synopsis of everything that it says in all of the Sifrei Nevi'im. Okay, a crash course in Yirmiyah, Yechezkel, Treyasar, and Yishayah. What else did I leave out? The Nevi'im Acharonim, primarily the Nevi'im Acharonim, will give you a crash course. That's what the Radak says in Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Hey. That's the Radak of Pasuk Ches. Now we come to Pasuk Tes in the Radak. Koyim Hashem Tzvokas, Mishpat Emes Shefaitu. Kishe Tishbitu Ben Ish Lireyu Yiye Mishpatchem Mishpat Emes. When you judge between man and his fellow, it should be with the midah of Emes. Mi Shehoya Tzorich la'asoyis imoy chesed v'rachamim sheheim yoyser al ha'mishpat asu. There is emes, and there is also chesed, and someone that needs chesed v'rachamim you shall do. I don't remember the word, it's a very famous word. There's a famous word somewhere in the Torah where it says also this order. It says the order of first mishpat and then chesed the emes. And the word goes something along the lines of a judge, a good judge, he comes into his court, a very poor man, and there's a tyrant that has a claim against the poor man, and this tyrant, it's not even in the category of pocket change to support this fellow for the rest of his life. Not only does this wealthy billionaire not want to help out this poor man, he wants to crush him. He wants to take advantage of the little teeny things that he still has left in this world, because that's the nature of the person. So a judge, the judge, in his opinion, feels that this person is a nebuch, and he's a real tzedakah case. And the judge is really on his own. If everything put aside, the judge himself would give him a very large donation. But now that he's a judge, he has the option of deciding the law in his favor in order to give him some relief from his desperate situation. That is 100% illegal. That is criminal. That is criminal. Just because the judge on his own was about to write out a check of many thousands of dollars in order to support this poor man, and under ordinary circumstances, had this not come to his court case, he would have went on his own to the rich man that's coming to take him to court and sit down and just, you know, ask him, can you maybe give a donation to these poor people? We have an organization where we collect money to feed poor people who need help, and we're collecting from all of the wealthy people in the community. Would you be so kind to contribute to our cause? The judge was actually planning to go to this fellow. He was on the roster. He was on the list to go that evening to his home. They had an appointment to ask this wealthy man in order to help out the poor man. And lo and behold, he comes into the court and he asks his secretary, who today is coming for judgment? This man, who he was planning to visit in the evening for asking for a donation. And who's the defendant? The poor man who he was planning in the evening to go to solicit donations on his behalf. So the judge can very easily say to himself, you know, I can take care of my evening activities right now. Instead of going tonight and asking him for a donation to support this poor man, look, they're in court. I can go manipulate the law, the judgment, so that the rich man will have to pay the poor man a fine, and that way he will have to be supported. And tonight I can go out, I can go bowling tonight with my wife instead of going to make a visit to this person to give the money. Great idea. Yeah, the only problem is it's thoroughly illegal. In the courtroom, what is critical is the law. What is the law? Is the law on his side? Is the law not on his side? After the judge decides who is guilty, and indeed it may very well be that this poor man is guilty, and he hands down the law, a harsh sentence, then when it's over, okay, now let me take out money out of my pocket and help him out and give him a nice sizable donation. The order is critical. First, it's mishpat emes shefaitu. First, judge the law. Innocent, guilty, yikoiv hadin es hahar. Let the law penetrate, perforate the mountain. The law is the law. After the law has been handed down, then we can give you tzedakah. Then I can take out money out of my pocket and help you out. Or I can even ask the rich man who the law has been decided in his favor and has won the case. I can ask him, maybe you can make a donation. We have a poor person in the community who happens to be the person that you've just stepped upon and crushed and obliterated. You know, he also happens to be a poor person for whom our organization is collecting donations. The order is critical. Everything has to be in its right place. Someone sent me an email, a very disturbing email, a person that I know who's a very, very strong supporter of Biden, who has blind faith in government, who believes that the CDC is more exalted than the Malachi Hashareis and Torah Sinai. A believer, I'm telling you, a real believer, and he's very close with me. I'm very close. My father's very close with this fellow. Very good, solid guy. And he's like, you know, the real, real hardcore. I don't understand, but that's what it is. So he sends me this article about an ethicist. He loves ethics. About an ethicist where a person asked a question to an ethicist. He has the ability to get the vaccine prematurely. He has the ability. His wife works in the hospital, and I really couldn't figure out from the context. It was a little bit too vague. Is it unethical? Is it unethical to cut the line? Because since she's so well connected in the hospital, and it's no big deal for her to get the vaccine, but she feels a little bit guilty because maybe, you know, there are people out there that are entitled and come first. And the ethicist said, it's not right. It's not right. You know, there are protocols. The CDC has handed down the guidelines. If you're a hardened criminal on death row, that's priority number one. If you're a healthcare first responder, okay. Two, but not before the criminals. murderers, rapists, drug addicts, they're more important. You come and then v'chulu, whatever, you know, we go through a whole long chadgad, you find. So, and he's trying to, you know, I insulted him, and I insulted him in the past. I told him that, like, you know, get with it. Don't have blind faith in everything that you see in the news. You know, wake up and smell the coffee. No, he doesn't. So he has it in, you know, I know he has it in for me. So he sends me this thing. So I write back to him, I don't get it. I really don't get it. It's illegal. She's not entitled. This is the law. Why is she asking an ethicist? Why are you showing this to me? This is not ethics. If you're not entitled, it's illegal. You go to jail. What kind of crazy thing is this to write in the newspaper? Should I cut the line? If you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to. Where does this come into? You have the law. First is MS. After the law has been settled, then you can talk about this and that. The whole question doesn't begin. And then I start to say, who's the ethicist anyway? What are his values? Where is he rooted? What is he, a Buddhist? What makes this guy tick? What newspaper are they writing for? What's their agenda? I told him, it's not the 80s anymore. There's also things.
It's an Asian. It is an Asian, the guy that writes that. It was this Sunday's article.
It was which paper was that? I even paid attention.
It was the New York Times.
New York Times?
The magazine section.
So you saw it?
That was the question.
That was the question to cut the line?
This was
so what kind of question? So you already asked, I didn't see it was the New York Times. So what kind of question is this? Is it illegal? What's the Shaila?
He is an Asian. Yeah, okay.
So why is this even a question? And why is a person, and what is an ethicist anymore?
You have to ask an Asian because it's the Chinese virus.
No, that's what you said. Maybe he's a Buddhist. So I said he is an Asian. I don't know if he's Christian or Buddhist. I don't know.
Yeah, well, secular ethicists never learned Musar, you know.
This is what your father used to pick apart every week. My kids who had your father for economics, they used to say that's what he used to do. The first class after the weekend was take apart the ethicist in the newspaper.
I know, that's why I told him it's not the 80s anymore. I told him my father's day, you know, there was what to work with. Today you can legitimize outright murder.
They absolutely do.
Cold-blooded murder.
Absolutely, these ethicists support euthanasia.
But even worse than euthanasia, you can have outright cold-blooded murder. You can legitimize some convoluted, logic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to let them let off steam, you know.
Okay.
Not really.
Let's go. But this pasuk is not to be taken lightly. There is a seder hadavarim. The first thing is mishpat. There are laws. Mishpat, emes, shefaitu. After we have our bearings, after we have our foundation, our baseline of what is the law, and the law is based upon Torah's Moshe, emes, Shulchan Aruch, then enters the Chesed V'Rachamim Asu Ish El Ochiv. In fact, it's very possible that the Pshut Shel Mikra is not telling you, oh, I want to tell you, you should go do judge and also do Chesed V'Rachamim. You know, this is super simplistic. You need a Navi to tell people that they should judge with MS. You really need, this is something which every society knows will destroy the society if there is no mishpat of MS. And every society has chesed organizations. Even Hamas has chesed organizations. So what is the pasuk telling you over here? It's telling you something that's so super, super simple? No, it's telling you order. Get your priorities in order. Mishpat Emes comes before Chesed V'Rachamim. When you put Chesed V'Rachamim before Mishpat and Emes, then the world comes to an end. Because then there's no limit to how corrupt you can go and how you can destroy society. There has to be the proper Seder Hadvar. Mishpat ve'emes, we have a baseline. This is the law. This is the halacha. This is the Iker Hadin. Finished. Now, is it possible, after we've established this, to go and help out people? Okay, that comes next. Yes, that's an obligation. But this is critical. And unfortunately, in our secular society, we see this. We see this. This is exactly really the core of what is the disease. We live in a Medina Shel Chesed. There's no question about it. We live in a Malchus Shel Chesed. But a Malchus Shel Chesed does not mean to redistribute the wealth. That's not Mishpat Emes. It's Chesed to take away your money and to give it to me.
Or to let everyone out on bail.
I'll be right. No, it's Chesed. Chesed, a guy is in prison.
It's not fair.
He's in prison. Yeah. He's going to die from corona. So therefore, let him go free. Let him go free. Let him go free. Chesed. Chesed, Chesed. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. This Mishpat. This Mishpat and this MS. You don't jump and do crazy, outrageous acts of Chesed when you completely obliterate Mishpat and MS. First, in this country, we need Mishpat and Emes. A clear, hard line of Mishpat and Emes. And then it is beautiful, noble, to engage in acts of Chesed, the Rachem.
Rabbi Levine, there's actually something which precedes Mishpat. We say, V'arastich li b'tzedek b'mishpat b'chesed u'v'rachamim. So before a system of laws can be enacted, there has to be a sense of what's right.
Tzedek.
What's tzedek?
That's all part of Mishpat. Okay, that's okay, fine. Okay. You have to have a base. We are blessed to have the Torah. We have the Torah. Unfortunately, other nations of the world don't have a gift from Hashem of Emes. So they're really struggling to find their.
It's recognized. There's lip service to it, but it's deteriorated.
Okay, let's go further in the Radak. Radak pasuk good. V'alman of Yosayim, a widow and an orphan. Elu shechem chaloshim hizaru b'chem oitzlot ta'ashku oisam lebimam lebidvarim. He adds in a word. He adds divarim. Okay, there is ishuk divarim. Do not torment a widow, an orphan, a ger, an ani with harsh words. They're very delicate. Not just with theft of money. Next. V'ro'as ish achiv retzolema al tachshavu ish ro'as achiv b'lvavchem afilu hamachshava bohem asura kol shekein ha-maseh v'oid shamachshava mevi'a lidei ma'aseh. Thoughts ultimately blossom into deeds. V'afilu lo yaseh ma'aseh osa shenemar lo yisisne esachicha b'lvavecha. Do not hate your brother in your heart. Next, so he's quoting over Pasuk to back up what it says over here in the Navi. Pasuk Gidal Vayimanu, Soy Rores, Inyon Ivus. The word Soy Rores means crooked. He's learning it a little bit differently than Rashi. Rashi and the Mitzudas, it means to turn away. He learns you've gone in a crooked way. Kifara So Reira, wayward.
In either case, it means to deviate.
Correct.
So whether it means by turning or twisting or going off.
To deviate, not to listen.
Basically
means. He turns his shoulder toward away from him. Away, does not want to turn towards him. Pasuk base. V'libam samu shamir. They've made their hearts into a shamir. What is a shamir? Shamir hi even chazaka. He's learning like the Mitzudos. The Mitzudos translates the word shamir as a stone. Rashi disagrees. Rashi learns the shamir is a worm that has the power to cut stone. Obviously, then, according to Rashi's understanding, a shamir is even stronger than stone, because of it, because the fact, the fact that it has the power to cut stone is an indication that it's even stronger. But that's not how Rashi learns, and that's not how the Mitzudos learns. They learn the word shamir is the stone itself. Shamir, well, he even chazaka
of that shamir.
No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying it's a stone. Rashi is saying that it's
it doesn't make any sense to say it means the stone itself.
But no, that's what they say. I'm not making this up. He writes,
I know,
Shamir
but
Heaven.
It doesn't seem to make any sense.
Why not? We don't know what the words mean. Let's go back to our old.
Is this the only reference in Tanakh to the Shamir?
I don't know. But in Tanakh. Yes.
We do know.
Yeah.
From the Medrash, what the Shamir was.
It was a worm.
And its role is
right.
In the building of the Beis HaMikdash.
Well, let's go back to our old principle. You have a word and you manipulate its vowels, it goes from one extreme to the other extreme. A yishrosh yisharesh, to take root and to uproot. Now, I don't know, does anyone know for sure, what are the proper vowels for the shamir worm? Is it called a shamir?
Or
is it called
the
shamir?
The Mitzvah Sion brings down the pasuk from Yecheskel with the word shamir. So you're asking that question, it answers it right there.
Okay, so you have another
passage.
A word, I don't know what the correct pronunciation of the worm, of the worm, the way it's used in the Gemara, in the Medrash, but perhaps, being that we do know that very often words, when you change their vowels, you manipulate them, the same exact word can go from one extreme to another. So a stone could be called a shamir. And an object that can destroy the stone, the quality of a stone is it cannot be broken. It is solid. To take that word and manipulate it in the opposite extreme would mean to break it. Its strength will be broken. So it's not, it can very well be that the reason why the worm is called a shamir worm is because it is building upon the word. The true word means it's a stone, rock, something that cannot be separated, cannot be broken. We then show that there is a creature in this world that has the ability to take that solid object and crack it. So just like we have Yishrosh, Yisharesh, the same exact letters, possibly they have the same exact principle when it comes to the Shamir. We see we're brainwashed. We don't learn Tanakh too much. So the only time we hear about this word shamir is in reference to the worm. So we assume the word shamir means it's a worm which breaks stone. And then we're very disturbed when we find the word being used to refer to a stone. So we say, oh, in the pasuk got it wrong. Someone who wrote the pasuk messed up because they don't learn the medrash. But it's just the opposite. The pasuk got it right. The real word is a stone. The medrash is playing with the pasuk. It's taking a pasuk that says that a word shamir means a stone, something which cannot be broken, and it's trying to tell us about a mystical creature that we are not familiar with, and give it a name, assign it a name because there is nothing to work with. So you know what they're going to do, Chazal? They're going to do what's natural. They're going to take the object which this creature can destroy, take exactly those letters and use it with different vowels to indicate that this creature has the ability to undo the power of this stone. Okay, if we have a conflict between a pasuk and a medrash, the pasuk wins. Contrary to popular belief that the medrash wins. So here, I'm not making this up. It says over here, clear, Shamir, he even chazaka, shelo yuchal ha-barzel lepoisla. Barzel cannot possibly penetrate it. But there is a mystical creature that can penetrate it. And we take exactly the word of the stone, we manipulate its vowels to indicate that this creature can take that Shamir and destroy it. Just like Yishrosh and Yisharesh. Yiskol, Yisokel, and a whole long other list of words that we have collected.
I have a question. If it's a tolaat here,
What does the Tolaat do here in the Pasuk?
So,
Libam Stamu Shamir, so the heart became like a, like that Tolaat to do what?
Not to listen. Mishamoya. Listening, so I'm saying Drush now. I'm not saying.
Destroy the listening?
Yeah. That's Drush. This is Drush.
Yeah, this, no, this is what I'm
it's Mishmoya. There is a koyach of this world of listening. Shema Yisrael. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. There is nothing more solid in the neshama of Klal Yisrael than the words Shema Yisrael, the last, the dying words of every Jew.
Right.
Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. This is ironclad. This is our rock. It is solid. We were so evil. We destroyed, we attempted to destroy this quality in our neshama of listening, of listening to Hashem. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. It's Drush.
Okay.
Pashup Shat, though, the Pashup Shat is the Shamir, if it means a worm, it means, like a Michal said, it means the tip of the Shamir. I guess the Shamir is called after its cutting tool. The tip of the Shamir is what cuts. And that part of the worm is rock solid. Yeah.
Yeah. In looking up the word, it appears a number of times in Tanakh. One of the definitions is semach kotzini, a thorn.
Yeah.
Like shamir vashayas.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's mentioned a number of times.
Yes, and it's kinois, we have that very often.
Another one, of course, there are two others besides the one here in Zechariah, where it says the definition, Evin koshe v'chazok ma'od kidomeh liyahalom.
Okay. Yalom is a stone. A very hard.
A diamond.
What?
A diamond.
Diamond.
One of the words for diamond.
Yahalom is diamond? That is an accepted fact?
It's supposed to be diamond. That's the way it's translated.
Okay.
Yeah. There used to be a Yahalom restaurant on 47th Street.
Yep. Upstairs.
Rabbi Meir, so you delivered meat there, or you had other activities there?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I never went in there, but yes.
Okay. All right. So we have a lot of different ideas. Exactly, what is the meaning of the word Shamir? But okay, so this is something which is it's a very like a Shamir. It's a thorn. Shamir v'shayis, the Shamir worm. It's a stone. Maybe it's the tip of the worm, and it's very interesting. Okay, we have a whole collection of ideas on the word Shamir. Let's go further.
But by the way, there is another thing that I see here. Mishmor et haTorah. What are we supposed to do with the Torah? Lishmor et haTorah. And what do we do? Shamir. It's undo the Torah. It's the same letter, Shin Mem Resh, Shamar, but in this case, it's the opposite.
Aha.
Lishmor ve'lo lishmor, laharos.
Shamir.
Mishmor et haTorah zot kedei lishmor ota. In order to,
it's a play on the letters, the similar phonetic sound. So right. There's a phonetic similarity which enhances the meaning of the pasuk. V'yes ha'dvarim, divrei toichach ha'shoyomim lochem ha'nevi'im, the words of Musa, reproof, beruchoy. Okay, so this, the Mitzudos David struggled. The Mitzudos David said the Ruchoy means a malach, which we didn't really have clarity. Does it mean that the Navi is a messenger? It just means a messenger? Or does it mean Hashem actually sent an angel to deliver the words of prophecy in the mouth of the prophet? Okay, this is another chapter in the book that we're writing about prophecy. How does all of this work? This is a very important pasuk in the book. Because here the pasuk, Hashem says, read the words of the pasuk one more time. Hashem, we're discussing over here the Nevi'im HaRishonim. Asher, Shalach Hashem, Tzavokos, Beruchoy, Biad, HaNevi'im HaRishonim. What? What does that mean? all the pasuk, if you were writing the pasuk, all you would say is Asher Sholach Hashem Tzivakos Biad Hanivim Harishanim. You would not hear the word Beruchai. So what's that doing there? So Rashi Mitzudas David says Al Yidei Malachoi. What? What does that mean? I don't know what he means. Does he mean that there's an angel, like in the movies, with wings? Is there an angel that goes and Hashem takes the words of prophecy, gives it to the angel, and the angel then brings the prophecy to a human being on this world and tells him what to say? Is that how it works? Is that the way prophecy works? We don't know what prophecy is. We have no clue. But is that the way it works? I always thought that prophecy is a direct communication between Hashem and man. There is no intermediary when it comes to prophecy. So maybe when the Mitzudas David said Malachoi, he doesn't mean an angel with wings. It means through human beings. A human being is a messenger. A Malach, more often than not, means a messenger. A human being is Hashem's messenger. Hashem speaks directly to the human being that he should deliver a message. The Radak is equally bothered by this word. He's very disturbed. Why is this word? What is it doing over here? And he explains, Beruchoi, to mean Beruach Nevuah, a spirit of prophecy, Shehoisa Midaberes Im HaNeviim. He's not being too clear here over here. What does that mean exactly? There's a Ruach of prophecy. Isn't that self-understood? Isn't that obvious? Why do we have to even say that? That's what prophecy is. What does this mean? Okay, again, it's not clear. Obviously, there's a lot more going on here. Next words,
in Melachim, there is a thing that the Ruach, Heye Ruach Sheker B'yad Nevi'a Sheker. So the Ruach is actually, is the messenger to destroy or to build. In this case, Ruach Nevu'ah.
It's a Ruach, not a Ruach, it's MS.
Yeah,
and obviously, there are many different levels of prophecy. We know that. We always know that. There are even 10 different words that are used to describe different types of prophecy. And certainly within each category, each form of prophecy, there are obviously many layers, many levels. You know, Chazal say, Ein shnei nevim misnabim besignun echad. Now, that simply means everyone has their style. Every Navi has their vocabulary, their signature, right? Signun, Abuch always tells me, means their signature. They have their unique. But perhaps we can suggest that the word signun doesn't just mean their vocabulary. In other words, let's take a step back. When we ordinarily talk about this principle, Ein shnei nevim misnabim besignun echad, we think it means Hashem sits down at the table with, let's say, 10 prophets. And Hashem says, look at the prophets as speech writers. Okay, lahavdil elef alfei avdol. However, you're a politician, and he sits down with speech writers. And he says, I want to deliver the State of the Union address. And this is what I want to say. I want to say A, B, C, D. And these are my ideas. And this is my policy. You, each 10 of you, come back to me in a week and deliver a speech. And I'll read all of your speeches, and the one that I like the best, I'll read. So each of the speech writers, everyone is unique. Each one has their own life experience. Each one has been trained in a different school. Each one is part of a different community. The vocabulary, their style of writing, their flavor, their personality comes out in the words that they compose. This is the simple way that we translate the words, Ein shnei nevim misnabim besignun echad. Hashem sends down a message. Hashem does not necessarily send to a prophet words. Hashem sends to a prophet concepts, a general message. And Hashem allows the prophets to develop and to articulate, to select the nuances, the words of how it will be presented. That's the typical classic translation of Ein shnei nevim misnabim besignun echad. But I'm suggesting to you that there might be another translation, another meaning to that principle. It means that the form of prophecy is different. The example that I gave you was the President of the United States sits down in the Oval Office, he calls in 10 people who are renowned to be the best speech writers in the world, and they sit around the table, around the desk, and he tells them. No. Signechah means the President, he calls into the Oval Office one speech writer, and he tells them what he wants to say. Have a nice day. Come back in a week with a speech. He then gets on the phone and he calls up another speechwriter and he communicates with him, write me a speech, or Michal, give me a moment, please. And he communicates with him, I want to deliver a State of Union address, here's my message. The way you relay your desire that you should be the one who's going to write a speech for me over the phone is not the way you communicate in person. To a third person, he writes an email. He types an email. I have to give a State of the Union address. These are my ideas. Do me a favor. In a week, I want on my desk a speech. The next person, he does a video conference. Okay? A video conference is not the same as an email. It's not the same as doing it in person. It's not the same as over the telephone. The next person, he doesn't even speak to. He sends a messenger. Can you do me a favor? Can you go? He tells one of his staff members, go call up this guy and tell him to write me a speech. So the people who are writing the speech, who are doing the work and are presenting the information, have received the command and the information in different ways. That's what I'm suggesting to you. It's called Ein Shnei Nevi'im Misnabim B'Signun Echad. Signal. Michal, you like to translate it as a signature. Signal. The signal that they get to
actually, I have a different idea. I think that means that there's no two prophetic styles that are the same.
That we know.
I think it's because unlike your analogy where they're contemporaneous, I think the variable is time. There are at different times, a different style is called for.
That's our first explanation. That's a given. Times change. The vocabulary of today's day and age is obviously a very different vocabulary, okay? All these words, Right. That's all included in the simple like we started with. Ein shnei nevim b'stam b'sign echad. Everyone has a different vocabulary, a different training. The times are different. The culture is different.
I see it in the mishpat. Ein shnei nevim, not shtei nevuot. Hashem sent beruchu a message to Zechariah and to Yeshayahu and to Yirmiyahu. But each one, you say it the way you think it's your character. Hanavi lo medaber oto davar kmo Hanavi Hashini. This one speaks this way. This one this way. Hanevuah, Hashem gives the nevuah. Now you dress it up as
personalize it.
If you want to be a Shakespeare, say it like Shakespeare. If you want to do it like the Zechariah. With the mashal, with the susim, or whatever it is, do it this way. It's nevi'im lo mitnabi'im b'signon echad. Hanevu'ah hi signon echad. It's one message. Unkelu says here, beruchu is b'meimre.
Words.
Amar Hashem. Hashem says. Now you say it any way you want it.
If I could explain something the way I look at it. When it says Lamar means God wrote the speech and I'm telling you to say it the way I said it. And the reason it uses it, I mean, for a lot of Nevi'im, it doesn't say the word Lamar. But you see in Yonah, in Haggai, in Zechariah, it says Lamar because the Nevuah, the amount of prophecy, the level of prophecy grew weak. And it's no longer a chazon. I can't trust you to say it the way I want you to say it because Nevuah was getting weaker, and therefore this speech I'm writing for you, and I'm telling you to say it over exactly the way I say it. That's what we say Lamar means. Lamar means say what I said exactly. Don't get poetic license here. So it says over here many times, Lamar. That's the way I look at it. I don't say I'm right, but that's the way I look at it.
But why the Nevi'im Rishonim was different?
Because they were more trustworthy to say it over what God's message was. But now Nevuah grew weak, so every once in a while God had to intersperse and say, Lamar, I'm not giving you a vision. I'm giving you a speech. This is what I want you to say.
What about Moshe
That's
Rabbeinu?
That's the way I look at it.
What about Moshe Rabbeinu? The greatest
Moshe Rabbeinu always says, Lamar. Right, because Moshe he could handle that level of prophecy in a different manner, but he could trust it. He didn't give him poetic license. When did he give him poetic license? Doesn't say it in Devarim. In Devarim, Moshe got poetic license and say you explain it the way you want. But when it doesn't say Lamar, it's for you to say how you want to interpret the Nevuah. But now it's different. I can't, and now I have to say Lamar because you are now on this Masa, like Malachi is Masa, and various other Nevi'im, which was Masa, or different levels of Nevi'im, as Rabbi Levine said. There are different levels of Nevuah, and right. Now it grew weak. So every once in a while, I have to hand you the speech because I can't trust you. It's very important for you to say exactly. The message is so significant that you have to say what I said. I'm taking away your poetic license. That's the way I look at it.
That's okay, that's
you read the Prime Minister's, you know, the book, how Begin gave his
speech. I have it. I never read it. Yeah, I have it, but I didn't. I skimmed it.
Read about Begin, about the speeches that Begin gave.
Who wrote them? He wrote them himself.
He rewrote it in a. You know, language, and he says, no, let's go to the original, what I wrote. Exactly. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Mayor Soloveitchik made that point. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. Let's now go to Pasuk. Okay, Pasuk Yud Gimel Vayihi Kasher in the Radak. Pasuk Yud Gimel Vayihi Kasher Karo Kamosha Karo Lochem B'Shmi V'lo Shomeim Ken Yikru V'lo Yishma V'lo Yishma Mida Kenegim Mida, just like when they called out. No, I'm sorry. Shakara lohem bishom velo shome ken yikru velo yishma. It will not be heard. Okay, they called it that. I called out to you through the prophets, and you did not listen. So too, when you will call out in your time of tzara, I will not listen. Pasuk yudalid ve'ei sarem al kol hagoyim asher lo yidu'um, and they were scattered. I will scatter you. They were scattered upon nations which they did not know. Enters the Radak. What is the unique, this unusual word of scattering, where we take the word of Sa'ara and convert it into the word of scattering? Milas ve'esuarem kosher ba'dikduk. It is a very difficult word. V'amru kihi murkeves. This is a composite. Mipoal hakal v'nifal u'mipoal hadagush. I'm not even sure what he means by all this. Let's just read a little bit further. It's a combination. This is some sophisticated form of grammar of the esoareim came mipola kal v'nifal. It happened. Nifal means the past. It happened, and kal means it's a lighter form of the word. But then he writes umipoal hadogush. Dogush means it's a harsh. It's a harsher form. So what is it? Is it light? Is it harsh? It happened in the past. It's not going to happen again. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what this means here. Let's read further. V'adoyni ovi zal kosav ki kuloi me'akal. What does that mean? Let's see. V'afal pishahu boideid, even though it's unique, even though it's one of a kind. Boideid means it's in isolation. It's in quarantine. Social distance from all the other words in the dictionary. Boideid, no, isn't that what it means? It's a quarantine. Perush, what does he mean over here? V'esar imam. The word ve'esar imam kmo yisusum midbar vitzia. What does that mean? Shepirusho yosusu imam. What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
I think I understand what he's saying here. It says ve'esarim. It means Hashem actually scattered them, but he himself went with them. Uh-huh. Esa arems the nifal, which when he himself
imam with them.
But he get of them. So he, it's a combination here.
He feels both their pain.
Ani v'hem.
Over here, we're doing the Midbar and the Tzia is the desert and Deslesh. And from the context, it appears, like you said exactly, Hashem is causing them to wander, but you're explaining that means, but I'm going to be with you. Like you said, your words, Imoy Anoichi Betzara. So when it says here the words, it's a comforting word. When it says that I'm going to scatter you, it means I'm going to scatter myself together with you. Which is very comforting. And it has to be that is going to be, scattering, I'm going to come with you. Okay, I told you this a few times. It made an impression upon me as a child. I used to watch the Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch, remember that show? It's just like Zoom. The Brady Bunch is the closest thing we ever had to Zoom. They were boxes, right? Everyone was in their own box. Ever watched the Brady Bunch, the beginning of the Brady Bunch? They showed all the different people on the Brady Bunch. Shemir, you'll put it up online for everyone. The opening sequence of the Brady Bunch. They were way ahead of their time those days. They had Zoom way before us. And I remember Bobby, the little boy, one day he decided he's going to run away from home. A little boy, he's going to run away from home. So they showed Mrs. Brady packing him up and saying, I'll come with you. I'll come with you. If you're going to run away from home, you can't. You're a little boy. how are you going to survive out there in this dangerous world? If you want to run away from home, so I'll come with you. I'll run with you. Okay? That's a very powerful lesson. That's a very powerful lesson. And that's exactly what Hashem is saying. You're going to go into Golus? So I'll go with you. I'll go with you. What do you mean? But the whole purpose of Golus is to go away from Hashem. No, I'll come with you. I'll come with you. Okay, so this is...
there is nechama here.
Exactly. In the klal, there's nechama. So the eis v'eisuareim... So this thing over here is yasusu imam, together with them. The omar... I don't know what this means. The point over here that we need for our purpose is I will join imoy anochi betzara. That is a nechama. Ani mitzta'er imam begolus kinyin b'chol tzorasam loy tzar. V'dibretar b'loshon b'nei adam, v'itachil l'farish sheyia v'eiso arem po'al yoytze. It's an active verb. Ki motzanu, ki b'po'al echad oymed v'yoytze, ki motzanu holmu ikvei sus, shehu oymed halamuni. I don't know what all this means over here. Yodati, yoytze. All right, so according to that interpretation, it means that it would appear to me that it's a continuous process. According to this, it means that the exile continues. What your ancestors have done has such far ramifications that the dispersion, the galus is continuing actively. It's not just that your ancestors sinned and they were sent out into galus and the galus came to an end and now it's time for reconciliation to return. No. For 2,000 years, we're traveling from place to place. We went from Bensonhurst to East New York to Borough Park to Flatbush to the Five Towns. Okay, just joking. But unfortunately, it's not a joke. Unfortunately, Klal Yisrael has traveled throughout the world in Golus. We don't stay put. That's part of the curse. It's a continuous movement of exile. V'hachacham Rabbi Avraham, there now he quotes over here, so the Yonis and Tirgim, Va'abad rinun b'nei amemaya. I will, it seems like he's learning this in the future tense. I will scatter you. And that's something that we learn in the evening. Unkelis, we come across this very, very often, more often than, that's like the perush that we use in the evening. The Ma'at Sari, he's literally obsessed with this, is that the Unkelis this Yonasan ben Uziel, but the uncle is, more often than not, changes the tense of the word. If the Pasuk writes a word in the past tense, he'll convert it into the future tense. If he writes it in the future, he converts it into the past tense. If it's in the present, you don't know where he's going to go. And it's always a very big mystery. Why does the Targum so often change the tense of the Pasuk from past to future, future to past, present? There are no rules. It's a very disturbing issue. What is going on? So if I'm not mistaken, the Bad Rinun is the future tense. I will scatter you. The Radak, who is the world-renowned expert on grammar, he wrote the book, okay? Sefer Michlol, okay? He is the authority on grammar. I think, if I'm not mistaken, all of the rules of grammar we follow today are from the Radak. Because grammar has you know, the chiluke deos. There are different opinions, a lot of different opinions on the rules of grammar. And not everyone agrees, but today the gold standard, or the one who won the day, is the Radak. And it appears that he, in his first interpretation, when he says that it's not bidikduk, this word, he seems to say that at the very least it's the past tense. Okay, he struggles to indicate that it is a word which means that your ancestors have committed crimes, and as a consequence of their crimes, they have been scattered. And then
he just say very simply, Unclus lived, it was still the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why it has to be the future. Because it didn't happen yet. It happened after the first Churban, but the second Churban hadn't happened yet.
No, but a lot of the things...
Everybody else is after the second. So yeah, but now he's thinking, it's going to happen. He sees it coming because it wasn't long after him that it did happen.
No, but even when he was in Chumash Bereishis, we were talking about stories of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. We're talking about the past. There are a lot of things that he's talking about, just because they're doing the Beis HaMikdash, doesn't really make a difference relative to us. It was the past for him the same way it's the past for us. But yet in many psukim, he changes the tense from past to present, and even also from Lashon Yochid to Lashon Rabim, from Lashon Rabim to Lashon Yochid. And there's no excuse, because there are words available in Aramaic that he can use to be accurate. And he deliberately chose not to be accurate for a reason which requires explanation. Here we see over here something along these lines. This is a very difficult word. And in this world, this word, it's a very important word, because this word, to a degree, is capturing the last 2,000 years. This word is the word of Golos. This word, even though this word is being used in reference to the Churban Bayis Rishon, the Bayis was destroyed, and Klal Yisrael went into Golus for 70 years. But the truth is, it's not the Churban Bayis Rishon is the Churban that we are in today. As we learned many, many times, the Bayis Sheni was never a full restoration of what was. It was just a temporary structure to give Klal Yisrael chizuk, to give them some guidelines to prepare for them resources, what they will need for 1,951 years until today, when Mashiach will come. That's all it was. But the exile that occurred at the Churban Bayis Rishon is something that we are still experiencing today. And what is the one word that Zechariah, who is the most relevant Navi, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, from all the prophets, they are the most relevant for us. What is the one word that is being used to define our exile? This word right here, ve'esoarem. So it would be wise for us to really figure out what this word means. Because this word captures what has occurred. It's not, too much grammar for us and it's over our heads. It is, unfortunately, for me at least, but it's the critical. And you see that the Radak took this word very seriously. It's not often you find a Radak that starts off by saying these words, kosher badiktuk, milas ve'esarim kosher badiktuk. And then he goes on to say, is it binyan?
Also
what?
Kasher, Ibn Ezra says the same thing.
Also, Ibn Ezra,
it's
yeah.
Very difficult word, the Bidikduk and so forth.
Mila Kosher Bidikduk.
Look at the,
oh,
at the
okay.
End. That's beautiful.
Okay, so let's just finish Radak. Let's finish Radak. Okay, we'll do Ibn Ezra. And maybe I have to do some homework. Do some homework to figure out what this means, what this Ibn Ezra really means. Because this word really captures the essence of Golos. And he dwells upon it. And if we'll know what this word really means, maybe we can have more of a grasp of what we're suffering, what's going on. We can find the solution to repair the damage. So first he says, it appears more like a word in the past tense. And then he goes on to say something beautiful of Kalman explained is imoi anochi b'tzara. And then he goes on to say the third interpretation that it's a continuous process. It's not the past. It's a continuous process. We're always moving. We've traveled from one nation to the next. And then he quotes the words of the Targum, which seems to imply it's in the future. What does that mean in the future? Well, we've already lived the future. And then he winds down, V'hachacham Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra. Okay, that's what you're quoting. You're quoting from the Ibn Ezra. What does he say? Zal perish ve'esar aleihem besaras ruchi. I will storm upon them. V'hu hefitz oisam al pnei kol hagoyim. What does that mean exactly? I mean, I don't. What is he adding? We learned this already before. It means a storm. That's super simplistic. That's the scattering. But he adds one word, ruchi. I will storm upon them with my spirit. That ruchi, adding the spirituality of the exile, changes the grammar. That explains why, and I'm just saying words, I don't know how all of these rules of grammar come into play. Until now, we've been taking this word, and we've been looking at this word as just a word which means we physically have been exiled. We have been dispersed. We have been scattered. We have been thrown out of the land. Ibn Ezra is obviously disturbed with the grammar of this word, with all of its nuances. Something does not add up. And it doesn't just mean that his conclusion, it doesn't just mean a physical scattering. It doesn't just mean being pushed around. There's a spiritual element that is injected into this scattering, which is so significant that it will cause a change in the grammar to make sense out of it. And the one word that he adds that changes the equation is ruchi. Ruchi. I will scatter them.
In my anger.
My anger.
Oh. I'll give you an example for it. I have a glass and I'm very upset. I take the glass and I throw it outside and it's smashed to pieces. It's all over the place. That's exactly what Hashem
Kas, does. Kas.
The kas.
Okay, ruchi.
Then it's the explosion.
Okay, so these are different. Maybe I'll be able to decipher this. I'm not sure I'll be able to figure out where I can find tools to figure out to what this means more. But we'll leave it with that. And let's just go now to the last word. We'll finish up the Radak. And now he's coming to explain the last Radak is coming to explain the repetition. I started with this today. The words are repetitious. After it says the words. V'oretz noshama achareihem. Why does the pasuk conclude with this verbosity? Vayosimu eretz chemdo l'shama. So he seems to be bothered with this question, and he says because it's corresponding tit for tat. Back in the previous pasuk, it said in the good old days there was verbosity there as well when hanegev v'hashafelo yoshev. Okay, back in Pasuk Zion, it said Yerushalayim Yosheves Ushileva. So I guess he seems to say is that the words Yosheves Ushileva correspond to the first expression, Noshama Acharehem, and the second expression, Vayosimu Eretz Chemdo Lishama, corresponds to the next expression, V'anegev Yashvelo Yoshev. Okay, so he does give some something to work with. When we read the pasuk, we were disturbed. We didn't have anything to work with. He at least is giving us something to work with. He's coming to this is parallel to what it said before. And since before there was a doubling of describing the peace and serenity, now when we describe the Churban, we likewise double the degree of desolation. All right, we're going to stop here. Mi'iratz Hashem, tomorrow we'll do the Malbim. We'll stop here, take a very short break, and then I'm going to want to learn a couple of just short little inyanim about the parasha, Parasha Shemos. Talk about Shnayim, Mikvech HaTargum, Shavavim, leadership. Moshe Rabbeinu this week rises to leadership and the midos of his leadership. And then another topic, which I think maybe we'll spend most time on, is Rosha, Lama Sake Esrayacha. It's a lot of good stuff on Rosha, Lama Sake Esrayacha. Be back in 30 seconds.
Tamari, where are you? Hello? Anybody calls? Eshi, you want to
speak? Yeah, it's Machman.
Baruch Hashem, I just got onto a site that has a lot of old matzavis from Kapata Rus.
Yeah.
I have one Tzvi Hirsch Klein, Miminkach. I told you that.
That would be the my great-great-grandfather's Hirsch Bear Klein.
Yeah.
Not Tzvi Hirsch, Hirsch Bear, Tzvi Doiv.
Yeah, Tzvi Doiv. It depends. Very interesting. They write the matzavis Tzvi instead of Hirsch. And also I found a lot of Beinhorns from 1880 and earlier.
Your family's Munkach.
Yeah. And then I found a whole new track of Appledores in America.
All right. Mayor. How did you know about Fenyus, Mayor? How did you know about him?
About Fenyus?
Yeah.
He used to live across the street from my parents on East 12th. Him and his brother-in-law.
Him and his brother-in-law. Right? I don't remember. I don't know.
His wife was a nurse.
I remember he lived in the. Didn't he live in the apartment building?
Could be he moved out.
He moved out.
He sold the house, but he sold the house to Schechter. To
who?
Martzka Schechter.
Oh yeah, that he lived in that house before. Interesting.
Yeah, I think. And his wife was a nurse, or his mother was a nurse. His daughter was a psychologist. Today's your stepfather's yahrzeit. You know.
Who's your yahrzeit?
Your stepfather. Your step grandfather. Mishkovsky.
Is that my step grandfather? He Mishkovsky. Wait, which Mishkovsky? No. He is my grandfather.
Yeah.
My grandfather. Which Mishkovsky? There are a few Mishkovskys. Which Mishkovsky?
I'll get you the name. What's his name? He had a couple names. Rafael something.
I don't know. I'm walking. But, no, my grandfather married Zivik Shaney. The last 10 years he was married. So he was married to Chana Mishkovsky. Well, right. So this is my grandfather's brother-in-law of his second wife. My grandfather's brother, my grandfather's second wife. So it was a brother-in-law.
Brother-in-law?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. My grandfather's
today's,
second wife.
Today's the Rambam's yahrzeit also.
When did Fenyus die?
What?
When did he die, Fenyus?
I don't know. Maybe Eretz Yisrael he died.
When did he die?
This week, I just got it. Look at Terev Das. He's an alumnus of Terev Das of 48.
Very strange. You know, it's really spooky because I haven't seen him at least in 15 years, maybe even more. Maybe more. And for some reason, I was thinking about him.
The neshama was knocking on your door.
So why? I'm telling you, it's like really spooky. I was thinking about him when? Last week, maybe.
Yeah.
It's very spooky. Very spooky.
Terev Das sent out the Shiva notice with the phone calls in Israel.
Anyhow, more important, Shabbos was Rav Huna's yahrzeit and Rav Mesharsha. They were murdered in 469.
469. It's a long time ago.
The reason I saw that, because we mentioned last week about when was the fall of the Roman Empire, and they were caught like the Jews between the Austrians, who, the Habsburgs, and the Ottoman Empire. The Roman Empire. When it fell, it was a good side of the fence you were on. Jews are always caught in the middle. And the five of the Amoraim were rounded up. Three were let go, and two were murdered. Rav Huna and Rav Mesharsha.
All right, let's learn here a little bit.